All right, as we know, it is coming to the end of 2012, and we think, what is 2013 going to be like? Will the world change? The Mayan calendar, well, that didn't come true, but will anything else come true? We're joined by futurist Morris Mislowski for a look at the top 13 trends for 2013. Welcome.
Well, welcome to 2013.
Well, not yet. Almost.
Oh, almost. It's here. I can feel it.
Futurists are always... Do you ever look at the present or the past?
Nah.
No?
Nah.
Boring?
Nah, too boring. I try and live in the future, but, you know, what can you do? Sometimes you've got to come back to the present.
Yeah, okay. So, presently speaking about the future, we're talking about the top 13 trends for 2013. And are we going to see things, just as a general thing, are we going to see a big leap forward? Are we talking about the next big, giant leap of mankind, or is it just going to be slow kind of progressions?
Slow. I don't think we're going to see a big push into next year. Next year is really going to be about innovation, taking what we already have and making better use of it. We're moving more and more onto our mobile devices, which sounds so obvious, but it's really only a 3-4 year conversation. Most people didn't have smartphones even 4 years ago. So next year is really about that kind of activity. I'm also seeing that the trends for next year seem to be based around nostalgia. We're going through tough times, we all know that, and I think we're going to come out the other end of what I call a new normal. And the new normal means that we've accepted it. We don't like it. It hasn't gone away. You know, the economic conditions aren't going to get better next year, just in next year. Hopefully they'll incrementally get better, but it's not going to be fixed next year. We also are going through an election in Australia, and America's got the same president, but a new 4 years. So lots of different change around. What we're going to see is really a pushback into a better time, or what we believe to be a better time, which is really interesting, and that's the 60s, because the 60s was never seen as a better time when we lived through it. So we're seeing a lot of nostalgia, we're seeing a lot of that thing coming back, so a lot of the old being reinvented and repurposed for a new audience and new people.
Oh, well, recycling.
Yes, it absolutely is recycling. A lot of the fashion and things are going back towards the 60s, the hairstyles, all those things are really headed back into that phase. Mm. Even the music seems to be headed back somewhat to that phase.
Really?
Yeah.
So some more Austin Powers, Shagadelic kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, look at Adele's new song, you know, Skyfall for Bond. I mean, it really has, I know it's Bond and it has to have that kind of feel, but it's getting great airplay and people are enjoying it. So we're seeing that slow move back to that world, and that's what 2013 will be. Year of consolidation, year of innovation, and we're going to slowly start moving forward.
Okay. All right, let's move on to number two and 2 degrees of separation. What we talk about, obviously, this is social media, and that has really taken giant leaps in the last 4 or 5 years. Are we going to see major changes?
We're going to see major changes in the way we use it and accept it. Social media, even up to a year ago, was seen by most people as being a fad, something kids did, and you know, I hope they get over it really soon so we can get back to being more serious. We know now it's not a fad. It's here forever. It's a communication tool, and that's all that it is. We just shouldn't overplay it. It's a new form of phone or fax or whatever else we want to call it. Next year, we're going to see more consolidation onto it. We're going to see more people using it, just using it ordinarily. Kind of the shine's gone off it. It's just there. We're going to pick it up and do it as we would the phone without thinking twice. And what I find intriguing that most of us, again, take for granted is that I do think we're only 2 degrees of separation from most people on the planet now. We used to talk about 5 or 6 or more. But if you go into a LinkedIn or a Facebook or one of those, you can generally ask somebody, do you have a connection to? It doesn't mean you're going to get their phone number and be able to stalk them. But usually within a couple of those requests, you can get close to the person or find the business or find the product or find whatever you're looking for.
Well, we had the Pope. The Pope did his first tweets just recently. So if you're signed up to the Pope, theoretically, you can tweet back.
And that's exactly it. So this transparency, this thing that we're seeing now where it's becoming normal to be able to, we believe, speak to the Pope, speak to the Queen, speak to other people, is kind of accepted now. Now, do we honestly believe that the Pope's sitting there with his mobile phone waiting to answer? I hope not, because he has far better things to do than that. But certainly the world of the Pope is being brought to us in that example. We're also seeing, you know, the Australian government tweeting through that. We saw the announcement of the imminent birth of royalty in England being announced on Twitter. So just becoming normal now.
Okay. Number three, bring it all together. What do you mean by this?
Bring it all together is really that what's happened up until now is what I refer to as fractured communication. There's been lots of different places. If you do use this mobile technology, you're kind of going in and out of sites all the time. You know, you might be doing a Facebook tweet, going in and out, closing it, doing all that. It kind of doesn't make sense. you really want it on one consecutive screen. And I know there's been apps around over the last year or so that let you do that, just let you see all of your communication. But we're going to see it not just in social media, in the case of Facebooks and so, and that kind of thing. We're going to see it for banks, for instance, where you'll be able to get your banking report, maybe your share trading or whatever else put together on one screen, consolidated for you. When you travel, perhaps your booking, your hotel booking, which are all different bits of information that don't sit together, will all come together into one space. They're called in fancy terms aggregated sites. Not important, but aggregated sites. And that, I think, is going to be the next frontier. The next billionaire sits somewhere in that aggregated site. The person that can figure out what it is we want brought together the most and give us the most joy to that will definitely crack another $1 billion out of it.
There you go, everybody.
So there's the challenge for 2013.
Who wants to be a billionaire? Hands up. All right. So number four is all the world's objects coming alive. Now, this is really interesting for me. I mean, what do you mean by this, all the world's objects? Well, you think they're actually going to grow legs and run away?
Maybe not, although that's been some of my nightmares since childhood. What we're talking about there is this notion, this thing called the Internet of Things, which is generally what it's called in a strange way. The Internet of Things means that everything we have around us, whether that's the book we read, the plate we're eating from, the food that we're eating, the supermarket that we're walking past, the poster, the person, and that list just goes on forever, can have a virtual life. Meaning that technology is now getting so good that when you take your mobile phone and use certain apps, which are not all that available yet, but they will be over the next year or so, it immediately recognizes what that thing is, and it searches the internet for that thing. So we were talking before about a book, for instance, in the bookstore, that if you went past and you literally took your mobile phone and showed it that book, it would go away and search that book, that title, and bring you back whatever was available on the World Wide Web about it. Who's read it, you know, review of it, whether it's good or bad, where you could buy them, and it just goes on. We know how many millions of hits we get. So that's what I mean by things coming alive. And the technology behind that is called NFC, near field communication. Again, no quiz afterwards. But what we're referring to is the technology that lets your mobile phone set up a mini network between you and the world, and mini being really close, so as you're walking past. People often feel that we're going to be inundated. This is all going to be by choice. Technology should always be by choice. We're not going to be swamped. If you don't want this stuff, you're not going to have it. But if you're in a supermarket, if you're walking past something, at times we'll find it purposeful to have this kind of interaction. Where we won't, there'll always be an off button. Always be an off button.
So literally, if there's a product there, you can find out more about it, like what's inside it, what it's made out of,
if you want. Yep.
The calorie content of the food, the author of the book, where it was published, how you can buy it. All those kind of things will just pop up.
Yep, and if you want to walk past and you want to pay for it, automatically your phone will do that. Again, you've authorized all of these things. Your phone will automatically pay for it. The store will know you've paid. You'll be able to keep walking. When you walk down the street, you'll be able to find mates that are nearby. You'll be able to find where they're having a beer or whatever else and find your way to them. We are going to expect, and I know this sounds strange, but 3 years ago people thought mobile phones and the way we use them was strange. 3 years from now, we will literally just be accepting this as part of our everyday world.
Well, is that good or bad? We'll see. Now, apps, we've seen with apps, we've seen some good, the bad, the ugly. We've seen things like Instagram, copper hiding recently because of their different privacy settings that because of now they've integrated with Facebook and, you know, maybe they can sell the photos or license the photos out to advertisers and people, literally, I did. And I'm saying it just because I don't want my photos to be linked, because I work here and things like this, to be off advertising. I deleted it, and I know a lot of other people did. So, the good, the bad, and the ugly of apps, we're going to see, obviously, they're going to keep on coming.
Oh, absolutely. We've only just begun to see our apps. Again, the story is only 3 or 4 years old. They've been around for about 15 years, but mainstream 3 or 4 years for most. If you think about it, we're moving towards our mobile devices. We're not doing much search online anymore at a fixed computer. And what we're seeing is that, for me, I don't want to sit there and type in the URL to get to a bank or get whatever I want. The easiest way for me to do that is to have an app, a little picture on my screen. If I just use my finger, press the button, and like Aladdin's cave, it opens up and lets me in. It makes sense from a consumer's viewpoint, and it makes sense from a manufacturer, supplier's, a retailer's viewpoint to be able to offer them that quick access. And, of course, we've got games, we've got all kinds of things. So what we're going to see and started to see already is that websites will start to fall away, URLs for them, and apps will increase as we use those devices to be able to connect ourselves to the world.
Okay, so out with the new and in with the old.
Yeah.
Now, that's a bit of a different way of thinking.
It is, and it goes back to what we started the segment with, which is that what we're going to see next year, I think, is a whole lot of stuff that people want done that we haven't done before and find new ways to do them. So we talked about banking before. We really just want our bank on one screen. Now, just give me the information and leave me alone. If we're going on a plane, we just want all the information on one screen. Whatever we do in life, even with health, if we're monitoring our health, for instance, what we can do now is we can look, for instance, we can take our weight off a scale, we can take our blood pressure and our heart and do all the rest. Again, lots of different bits and pieces. We're going to see over the next year or so all of that brought together. And again, that's going to be more and more normal. So a lot of the innovation that I'm talking about, that I'm seeing my clients have, and that's out there in the world, are really just modern-day responses to things that you and I want to do in the everyday world. Mm. We now have new technology that lets us do it.
Makes a lot of sense. Number seven. Now, this is something that local producers always say. They say, you know, think globally, buy locally. You know, that whole thing of, you know, support your local environment. It reduces carbon footprint. And the more that we're seeing the populations grow, it does make sense, doesn't it?
I think it does. It does for a whole lot of reasons. As you said, for those reasons, and they do make perfect sense, but also from a viewpoint of we live locally, we kind of like products that reflect us, reflect our culture, who we are. I mean, we like some of that global stuff. We're not going to walk away from it. We're also, in many ways, becoming more environmentally conscious. There's a whole global footprint thing around it that does inform that sector. In other words, if I don't have to bring it in from the States and be responsible for flying it across and all that other stuff, it really doesn't make sense.
That's all come down to awareness. Now we actually know where a lot of our products come from, whereas before it was very tough to know.
Absolutely. And we're also more conscious that we can influence that, whereas before we kind of felt it was Big Brother. We didn't really have much part to play. So we're doing all of that, and we're kind of coming back to the point of, yeah, we know the world out there, we know that we can connect with it, which is what we spent the last 4 or 5 years doing, proving to ourselves that we can touch every planet, every continent on the Earth. But right now we're saying, well, I know I can do that. You know, I really just want what I want, and most of that's around me locally. What we're going to see are a whole lot of, I think, niche businesses start up, artisan businesses, people doing quality work, being able to sell it online, all that kind of material, that kind of nice things that we might be able to find in new industries, new innovations, will slowly become possible as we get a bit calmer, as I think we are, about this internet, just realise all it is a connection tool.
Okay. Well, and this one, contentious, given that we've just come from a very religious period, consumer is God.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Now, that comes from the saying the consumer is king.
And why say, God? Why elevate up to the highest?
And we come down to, it really is from that consumer is king statement that we had in the 60s, which was a marketing way of believing that the consumer was in charge. What we now have, and it almost is, and I've used God in a little g on purpose because I don't want to take it to the extreme,
that's right.
Is that what I'm seeing is that we now believe that we are the center of the universe. I'm not saying this is a good thing, but this seems to be populist opinion. And that's because we can see the world from our own perspective. Again, we're using technology as a way, not blaming it. But, you know, we hear people want to know what we're doing on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. We see the world from our own eyes. We look for things in our own particular ways. We're kind of getting this impression that we are, in some ways, more important, and that's painting my view of it, more important than maybe we are in the world. And the consumer now has that impression. They're saying that to retailers. What they're basically saying to retailers, to other people to provide products is, look, I know you're out there. If you don't do what I want, then I'm happy to go somewhere else. I know there are 50 other people that can do it. And not only can I do that, but I can influence my tribe, my people, to make that move as well. So what you're finding now is retailers, manufacturers, suppliers, people that are selling products and services are really now listening harder than they ever did before, because they know that consumers now have the ability to move on very quickly to somewhere else and somebody else.
Well, it is the way it is at the moment, and let's see what happens with that. Number 10, okay, let's move on right to number 10. Right before my eyes, and this is what you've got here. What do you mean by that?
So right before my eyes is really that we can see the world whenever we want, wherever we want, and we have this impression, again, that we're centralized, that the world is at our feet and at our fingertips. It plays into this cultural notion, and again, I'm not putting it up as a good thing. I'm just saying that this is the way society is moving at the moment when we look at it across the planet, and it really is across the planet. So if that's a society that we want to build, and it seems to be at the moment, that is where we're headed into the next year and beyond.
Okay, and who cares if you're having coffee? Yeah. Is this whole idea of always being switched on, is it the idea?
Well, it is, and I'm getting to the point where I am seeing lots of people now who are saying exactly that. You know, we're kind of past that whole, it was exciting to know stuff. There was a point when it was early and it was new and it was shiny and everybody wanted to know what everybody was doing. I call that the pimply teenager period, you know, where the world just is about me and we talk about that. Right now people are saying, you know what, leave me out of it. Contact me when things are important, when we have to know about material. I'm finding people that have been in the space for a while, more mature users, and I mean by that simply people who have used it for longer, are now using it for a purpose. Now, they're not just phoning to say hello, they're actually phoning, or they're SMSing, or whatever that social media tool is they're using. They're doing it with a purpose and with a desired outcome. So I think that the avalanche of social media, of content, of contact that we've had before, is kind of going to mellow over the next year or two. It just becomes ordinary.
I hope so.
I do too.
Because I'm really tired of hearing what people have for breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, really?
Yeah, no, I'm way past them all. I'm there with you. I'm there with you. So we're going to see a mellowing out. And again, this is because it's becoming ordinary. You need to remember, human nature is when something's new and shiny, we kind of get excited by it. We kind of push it to its limits. We try and do everything with it. We try and prove that we can. And we're past that point now. We've taken it for a test drive, kicked the tires. It's just another thing in the garage. Let's just move on.
Okay. Now, this one I'm seeing a lot more of, and with myself, even small purchases, maybe something of, you know, a couple of dollars to something that's a bit more substantial, to, you know, actually paying off, you know, car registration or something like that. Well, cash no longer is king. And you're really seeing that more and more.
Yeah, I think we're moving into a less cash society, not a cashless society. But again, we talked about NFC before. We talked about a lot of the banks that are now giving us credit cards or debit cards that allow us to pay for small items like a dollar or 50 cents. And we can go into some of the chains now and literally just pay for an ice cream or something with that kind of technology. It makes sense in many ways for us just to continue down that plastic path, and eventually, in another year or two, it'll actually be on our mobile phone through NFC, and that we won't carry the folding notes around. I don't think it'll disappear, because some people like to do that, but the use of it and the carrying around of it, I don't think we're going to see much of into the future.
Yeah, well, a lot of those kinds of safety issues arise and all that kind of stuff, and yeah, I guess when they come up, we'll deal with those when they come. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, when you get mugged, when someone steals your money, you can't exactly get your money back. So,
Ways it's actually easier to get it back from a digital sense than it is from a physical sense.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. At least there's some kind of trail. So, and print your own dinner set, number 12.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
This is the thing that I've been waiting for the last decade or so, and I think that we're on the verge of it. This is called 3D printing. It has been around, as I said, for about 10 or 15 years.
Oh, no, that was the one when they were doing burgers and organs,
Yes. You don't look pleased with that, but I am.
Oh, it just seems weird.
It does. So what you need to think of, this is the love child of Star Trek's Beam Me Up, Scotty, you know, where they put somebody in a thing and it disappeared,
yeah,
and the fax machine. I mean, really, that's what's a combination of both.
Okay.
First thing is you need to take away the notion of it disappearing, which is what happened in Star Trek. So what we're talking about literally is that you will be able to take a model, so you'll be able to scan a glass that you might wear, or a motor part, or an organ, as you said, from the human body, or whatever else. You'll be able to make an exact 3D replica of that, and then through what's called a 3D printer, which is really just a big printing machine, be able to print that item absolutely ready for use. So if it's a human organ, you can implant it into a body and it will begin to pump if it's a heart or an artery. If it's a car motor part, it'll be able to move and do and have exactly what it's supposed to have.
How? I mean, this is the whole thing. Like, when you get a transplant, you've got a certain amount of time before that organ pretty much dies.
You know,
it's unusable.
Yep.
So that's why it has to be fast and, you know, keep it on ice and da-da-da-da-da. How can you print an organ and then it just starts working?
Yeah, it's quite incredible. And we're not talking about something that will happen in the 5-minute space, but it really happens over a very short space of time. What they plan to do, this is all in prototype stage, yeah? So don't go down to your local doctor and ask for a copy of your heart. It's going to be a decade or so before those things become normal and possible. But what we're looking at now, what they're looking at, I should say now, is taking your existing organ, making a 3D image of it, so it's exactly the way your heart is, exactly the way the kidney is, or the bone, or whatever else, and then beginning to reproduce that in a 3D format. This year, we've had a couple of things happen. We've had a hospital in the States that printed an artery, a human artery, and they printed it from sucrose, which is a sugar. So what they do is they create what are called scaffolds. And scaffolds, just literally think about very, very fine sugar being put together. And then they put human tissue, human matter over the top of that, and it grows over the top of that and eventually becomes that part. So at this stage, that's how it's working. We're literally by scaffolding, by putting together inanimate objects like sucrose, putting human tissue, human heart, human whatever over the top, and then eventually growing that. And eventually it could be a day, 2 days, or 3 days. I'm not talking about a great length of time. What you end up with is an exact replica of the one that was in your body. And we've already had implants of human hips put into people that are exact replicas of the human body. We've seen kidneys being done as well. Again, these are all prototypes. These are all first-offs, many years away from it being ordinary. I know it sounds extraordinary, and it does, which is why I've been waiting for it, but there are so many really good medical facilities around the planet who are not chonks, who are not out there, you know, to say this works when it doesn't, with a lot of peer review that are telling me this thing is going to be part of our norm. But also in our daily lives, when we go out to buy clothes, when we go out to buy dinner sets, when we need a car part and we can't get it, all of those things will be able to be printed in the next 5 years or so.
Wow. So it's mind-blowing.
It's a big change. Now, I want to preface that by saying that we're not going to get rid of everything we have now. This is just another way to do that. It'll be another way, as well as the traditional offering. So still lots of clothes shop, lots of normal shops. This is just another way to do it.
Well, it really is mind-blowing and quite, I don't know, pushing a lot of kind of ethical...
Lots of debate. Yeah, lots of debate to be had. Yeah. Lots of debate. Why? Especially around the organs and the human, all of that.
Yeah. I mean, the debate when they grew a human ear on the back of a rat,
yes,
and what that did for people.
Yes.
And, all those religious issues. So, watch this space.
Yeah.
Now...
And we should never do technology for technology's sake. I'm the first to say that. Just because we can doesn't mean we should. So you're right, we will have this debate as a society over the next decade and beyond.
So, number 13, the last one. Now, this one has taken me by a little bit of surprise, considering the stalemates that we've had, especially with Copenhagen, then with Doha, it was really watered down. Here you're saying that we might actually have a bit of an introspective and start looking at the planet, maybe asking a few questions. I mean, the questions may be asked, but you think the answers are there to be had?
Well, the answers are there to be had if we want them. So that's my glib answer to that. I'm not convinced we want them yet.
So year 13, you think would be a lucky number in terms of that way?
I think we're going to start the discussion again. If you think back to the last few years, we've had economic concerns, and they've kind of taken over from the environmental and broader concerns that we used to have. There was a lot of debate about the planet going into the very early in 2000s, 2005, and that. We had the time and the space to do that. Unfortunately, when we started to go through these economic conditions, when we started to see the change in leaderships around the world, people became more immediate in their concerns, and what is considered to be a secondary issue, not less important, but a secondary issue, was kind of taken off the national debate, international debate. What I'm saying is that as we reach this sense of more normal, in other words, we've accepted the economic conditions, we've accepted that there are issues around the world, we're now going to free up some headspace to be able to come back to things that are more long-term, more concerning for a generation or two, and maybe look at some ways that we can resolve, solve, cope with. So it really is just a response to saying, yeah, I know that's bad. We started the debate by saying that. I know that things are bad out there, but we really need to do some medium to long-term planning as well for our planet. And I think 2013, I'm hoping anyway, will be the start of that journey again.
Okay, very interesting. Well, thanks very much, Maurice Wieslowski, who's a futurist, obviously, and is looking into what 2013 may bring us in the top 13. Thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure as always. Have a great 2013, everybody.